Mix 103.1.
This week on Viewpoints.
People are really ignored. They have to just suffer, basically, suffer in silence.
The hidden healthcare crisis happening in American prisons. Then,
athletes, for sure, like at a Power Five conference school where they are known, they probably want to maintain a certain image and they don't want to appear weak.
Understanding the mental illness epidemic that's plaguing collegiate sports teams. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
I love a day on the water with friends, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis sometimes holds me back. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy.
Teaching music is my passion, but my active psoriatic arthritis can limit me at times. Now I'm treating my joint symptoms with Skyrizi.
With Skyrizi, most people with plaque psoriasis saw 90% clearer skin at 4 months.
Or if you are an adult with active psoriatic arthritis, Skyrizi helps you move with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
There's nothing like clearer skin.
There's nothing like better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
In the U.S., the right to health care in prison is guaranteed by law. But in practice, this promise falls dangerously short. A recent report published by the Prison Policy Initiative, a nonprofit organization, looks at the substandard state of correctional health care in America. Today, the main objective in many prisons isn't to diagnose and treat, but to stabilize and avoid death. This systemic directive minimizes spending and avoids liability. This means that oftentimes, even urgent complaints like chest pain face systemic delays or denials. Chanel Burnett is all too familiar with the system as she spent 19 years behind bars in two different prisons in Virginia. Today, she's served her time and is a writer, author, and advocate. Burnett became incarcerated at just 25, young, healthy, and unaware of the system she was entering into.
What I first saw initially was a lot of death, honestly. Conditions at Fluvanna as far as medical care were very poor. A lot of people were misdiagnosed. If they called a medical emergency, sometimes medical would not show up. I mean, it would take at least maybe 5-10 minutes for them to even come. Sometimes they were so short-staffed, but however, that shouldn't have been a problem.
She remembers when prisoners would eventually get in to see a healthcare professional, but would often return and say that no one would listen to or believe their symptoms.
Say we have a complaint of pain. We are oftentimes looked at as liars or, you know, manipulators because we are in prison, but we are never believed. We're unhurt because they feel like we're, you know, not being truthful about what's going on or trying to manipulate them for this medication, that medication. So we're always not really heard.
And this isn't an isolated issue. Research across the correctional system reveals that this wide-scale dismissal and bias happen over and over again.
There is an idea that pervades the culture of correctional health care that incarcerated people cannot be trusted as sort of communicators or people who can speak to their own healthcare needs. This is called malingering in correctional healthcare. And the idea is that there's a base level of suspicion that needs to be brought to patients whenever they raise a medical need. And this sort of culture is what runs through a lot of the problems that we see. There's this just sort of disregard that when people are talking about their healthcare needs, when they're advocating for themselves, that there is truth there.
That's Brian Nam Sonnenstein, a senior editor and researcher at the Prison Policy Initiative and contributor to this most recent report on correctional health care. He says that the policies in prisons only allow for medically necessary treatment, and this is often up for interpretation. There's a culture of secrecy, and prisoners rarely have access to second opinions, private hospitals, or self-pay. If a doctor practicing outside the premises prescribes a medication, prison officials can delay, alter, or even terminate the treatment plan.
Maybe they have diabetes and they're having issues with their limbs, their hands and their feet. You know, they're trying to go see a specialist. After years of fighting and threatening lawsuits, maybe filing lawsuits, they actually get an appointment. Maybe that appointment gets canceled because there's not adequate correction staff to bring the person to their meeting with the outside specialist. Or they'll go to the specialist and the specialist will say this person needs this treatment or this drug. And then when the person is returned to the prison will say, we do not believe that this is essential. We will not pay for this. We're not, you know, something like that. Or they will just continue to sort of drag their feet on it and sort of delay and delay and delay. And there's really not a whole lot that an incarcerated person can do other than persistently advocate for themselves and potentially file lawsuits and try to sort of overcome this Byzantine system that they have to jump through in order to successfully win their case in court.
Burnett says she saw firsthand how severe diseases or chronic conditions often went misdiagnosed or were missed entirely.
One lady I remember, they kept diagnosing her with something else, but it ends up at the end stage, she was in stage 4 cancer, and then they finally caught it. And by then it was too late. She passed away.
One big driver behind this death and countless others is the big focus on medical spending. Noam Sonnenstein says that private contractors are in charge of many correctional medical units and rely on models that prioritize profit over care.
There are 2 or 3 main models that exist in the country. One is called fixed rate, and that is essentially the government pays a flat rate to the contractor for each incarcerated patient, regardless of their needs. So every dollar that does not go to the care becomes profit for the contractor. As you can imagine, this creates an incentive for the contractor to reduce costs so that they can maximize their profits and also contain costs in a way that are attractive to the prison so that they know what they're budgeting and they don't expect to see huge increases year over year, and so that they get their contract renewed, right? You also have something called cost plus. This is where the contractor gets reimbursed for their expenses plus a fee, right? So instead of the government paying a flat fee, like I just said, the contractor will pass on the costs of care to the government. And on top of that, they will pay a fee, which is the profit for the contractor. So in this case, the government saves money when incarcerated people use less expensive services. And so it's a similar dynamic.
In 2019, research conducted by Reuters showed that deaths in prisons with private healthcare contractors happen at far higher rates than those with publicly run models, and yet transparency is rare. Deaths are underreported, healthcare data is scarce, and oversight is nearly non-existent. Burnett remembers noticing how healthcare providers in her prison seem to have little control over care.
I think, honestly, in all actuality, I may have seen one MD. They were always physician's assistants, CNA, who are, you know, doing the blood pressure and all of that. But no, they were always just providers is what they were called. Just no one with a real MD. I saw maybe one and she was very helpful. And I found that the ones that were the most helpful were the ones they let go of. Like anyone that's too helpful and that are those that are for us, they get rid of.
This culture of dismissal and secrecy extends past employees and into the data as well. Noam Sonnenstein says there's little to no transparency between prisons and the public when it comes to prisoner death reports.
We have little to no data about healthcare outcomes, about healthcare quality, and really even about deaths in custody. If you know, this is another rabbit hole that you could go down, but deaths in custody reporting in the United States is not good. It's voluntary. There are a lot of deaths that happen in jails and prisons that go uncounted. You will find in news reports often that deaths are reported way after the fact.
Since there's no mandate in place requiring reporting of health outcomes and deaths, it's harder for researchers and journalists to get any data from private contractors because they're not a public entity. Naam Sonnenstein believes there needs to be greater transparency and a big push to reconfigure the system. Zooming out, this current model, which fails to provide adequate health and mental health care, ultimately feeds into the revolving door of incarceration.
You know, if somebody is struggling with a chronic illness or a disability and they're not able to work and they're not able to remain housed because they can't afford it and their medical needs are unmanaged, this is a major contributor to incarceration. And so ultimately, a lot of the recommendations and a lot of what this report is gesturing towards is this need to stop this exceptionalizing of incarcerated patients, this removal of them from public health.
Burnett was released last year after serving a 19-year sentence. Today, she lives in Virginia and has reintegrated back into public life. Thanks to Medicaid, she's been able to catch up on her medical care.
I was able to go and get a PCP. The place I go to, they also have like mental health care and they do all of that stuff. So it's basically been pretty good about, you know, being treated and in a timely manner with real professional people. And you know, it's been a good experience.
To find out more about this topic and Chanel Burnett, Brian Naam Sonnenstein, and the recent correctional health care report from the Prison Policy Initiative, visit viewpointsradio.org. To support our show, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for exclusive content. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the secret student health crisis, when Viewpoints returns.
If you have summer plans, then make Macy's Summer Style Sale your first stop. That's because you'll find amazing deals on exactly what you need to make any summer occasion feel like a getaway. Whether you're headed to the beach or your friend's backyard, we're talking matching sets, airy linen, swimsuits, cover-ups, and so much more for 25 to 50% off. Yeah, up to half off. So no matter where you're going, head to the Summer Style Sale going on now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
When you switch to Progressive and bundle your home and auto, you could save hundreds, and that's a surprising amount of money.
Whoa, that's like farmer's market money.
That's like give me a gallon of that locally sourced raw honey money.
That's certified organic heirloom tomatoes in every imaginable color except red money.
That's let's get 2 pounds of pink oyster mushrooms money. I'm not even sure I like pink oyster mushrooms.
Guess it's time to find out, because you could save hundreds when you switch to Progressive and bundle. Then the world is your pink oyster mushroom. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Shopping with your parents can be embarrassing.
Why would they sell jeans with holes in them? I'm going to speak to the manager.
Mom!
That hoodie is giving. You should get it. YOLO.
Thanks to the Chase mobile app, your kid can shop independently while you keep an eye on their spending. So you can go from...
We can be twinsies!
To...
How was shopping? Saw you stayed on budget.
Thanks, Mom.
Freedom for kids. Control for parents. That's family banking from Chase.
Accounts subject to approval. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Sometimes it may seem like student athletes have it all. They're living the dream by competing on the main stage while also getting to attend college tuition-free. Generally, these young people are well-liked, admired, and seem to find an instant community through their sport. But behind these shiny exteriors, there can be a lot more going on than meets the eye. According to the nonprofit organization Athletes for Hope, more than one-third of student athletes have experienced a mental illness at some point. This includes anxiety and depression, as well as eating disorders, burnout, and extreme stress. So, what's behind these staggering numbers?
We've had a pandemic that we've all had to deal with collectively, and that's led to an increase in mental health issues, really nationwide and worldwide. So, that's one thing. And so those numbers have gone up, and we've seen that across the board. And athletics is really no exception. So student athletes are dealing with the things that we are all dealing with, but they also have unique stressors as well. And having to balance performing at a high level in sport, but also academically, it is unique to the student athlete population, and that can be overwhelming at times.
That's Dr. Julia Motto, a clinical and sports psychologist at Princeton University and Lafayette College. Amato highlights that student athletes are just as likely as non-athletes to experience mental health issues. However, the main difference is that they're much less likely to receive help. In a survey sent to student athletes by the NCAA, less than half the participants said they were comfortable seeking mental health services. With sports often celebrating those who push through the pain and suffer silently, many athletes feel ashamed if they seek out treatment.
I think there have been professional athletes across the board who have really stepped up and shared about their stories and experiences, and that's really helping to destigmatize. But I think one of the problems is that athletes are strong, they're tough, and they've had a lot of success ignoring pain, pushing through difficult things. And so that's a skill set that they have and possess, and that serves them very well in terms of their sport. But the problem is that because of that preference to take care of one's own problems and to push through and do it on your own, it can really backfire as it relates to mental health. So athletes have a tendency to either ignore or push things aside when really they could and should be seeking help sooner.
If the pressure of being a student athlete is so overwhelming, some might say, why not just quit? Amato says so few leave because there's a lot to lose. One big factor is the possibility of losing an academic scholarship. Oftentimes, many student athletes who leave the sport are forced to transfer to a more affordable university or end up dropping out of college entirely. With this abrupt shift, it's common to feel completely lost, and after years of grinding to make it to this level, the pull to stay is stronger than you might think.
If you've made it to the collegiate level in athletics, it's because obviously you're very good at it, but it's likely become a huge part of your identity and who you are. And so even though sometimes participation in sport can be a great source of stress, it's also a great source of joy. And it's, I think, again, it's sort of ingrained in the athlete mindset that this is supposed to be hard. If it were easy, everybody would do it. So I think student athletes understand there's some degree of challenge and difficulty, and that's what they're drawn to in a sense. And so that tied with, this is such a huge part of my identity, I don't really know who I am or what I do without sport. I think that leads some athletes to stick with it even when it might be causing them distress.
And while this endless activity may factor into mental health struggles, it's also a great source of stress relief. According to the Mayo Clinic, doing as little as 10 to 15 minutes of exercise per day can improve your mood and help ease symptoms of depression and anxiety. For many athletes, playing the sport itself isn't the source of unhappiness. It's juggling all the demands that go with it. What makes these feelings worse is that some students feel like they can't speak up.
I think one of the number one things all coaches and athletic programs should be doing is right in the beginning of the season with the athletes returning, making sure that they know mental health is just as important as their physical health, that you're invested in their mental health, showing them what their resources are. Today at Princeton, I've hit all the fall sports teams and got out in front of them and introduced myself. I'm Dr. Julie. I'm your sports psychologist. Here's how you schedule appointments with me. So the coaches and the department really are the gatekeepers of that. And if they're out there saying, hey, we want you to talk to the sports psychologist, we want you to seek help when you need it, it gives the athletes permission then to do so, knowing that they're not going to be punished for that.
In particular, male athletes are the least likely to seek treatment out of fear of being perceived as weak or not masculine. To combat this hesitancy to ask for help, both the NCAA and universities across the country have expanded access to mental health services on campus and online. On the NCAA website, there's a handbook that details how to handle mental health crises for both players and coaches. As for individual colleges, many have hired more sports psychologists like Amato. These doctors have knowledge and experience in treating the specific challenges student athletes are facing. However, Amato notes that these programs can only work if they're backed by the coaching staff of each collegiate sport.
I think one of the most important things to keep in mind as you're a teammate, a friend, out there is that we all go through things, and there's not a person who walks the planet who hasn't been through some form of emotional pain or suffering. And so just checking in on people, asking how they're doing. If you notice that a friend or teammate is acting differently, you know, maybe they're more withdrawn, a little more isolated, not being as social, or they're engaging a lot of risk-taking behaviors that seem out of character for them, that might be alerting you to there's something wrong here. Or if they're talking about wanting to die or feeling so stressed out all the time, I mean, those are pretty big indicators that something might be going on for them. And it's always worth asking questions about how someone is doing. Don't be afraid to ask those questions.
And these mental health resources are also available for regular students as well. There's no stigma in asking for help. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, you can dial 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. All calls are anonymous, and the hotline is open 24/7. For college students, mental health services are available on your school's student health portal or in person at the Student Health Center. To find out more about Dr. Julie Amato and all of our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on Twitter and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galanti and Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
There's nothing like when you get that part from eBay and it just fits. Yeah, the first time. So you can do less of this and get right back to more of this. At eBay, you'll find all the parts you need, guaranteed to fit, at prices you'll love. Sounds good, doesn't it? eBay. Things, people, love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. From coast to coast, there's a shift happening, and it's not a positive one. A study published in the journal Nature Cities last month reveals that all 28 of the biggest U.S. cities are experiencing sinking. In nearly all of the cities, two-thirds of the land mass is affected. The formal term for this is called land subsidence. And it's not just coastal regions. It's taking place in the Midwest and far inland, too. To reach these conclusions, researchers turned to satellite data, analyzing hundreds of pictures of ground levels between 2015 and 2021. The data showed that Houston, Texas is the fastest sinking city, with more than 40% of its land area dropping. Other places at the top of the list include New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Philadelphia, San Antonio, and Dallas. You might read 5 or 10 milliliters and think, that's not big, but the compounding effect over time can comprise the structural integrity of buildings, bridges, and roads. Lowering land elevations also increases the risk of flooding, especially in coastal areas already dealing with sea level rise. So what's the main culprit? Scientists point to excessive groundwater extraction. As cities pump water from underground aquifers to meet growing demands, the land above compresses and sinks. With population growth and intensifying climate change, study researchers believe the sinking itself may be unavoidable, but the damage doesn't have to be. This information should be used to adapt current building codes and practices, as well as create wider scale solutions that may be able to slow the deterioration. This change is hard to see, but it's one that we can't afford to ignore. That's Viewpoints Explained. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. The first Stephen King film adaptation was Brian De Palma's classic, Carrie, in 1976. Since then, there have been more than 50 films and more than 30 TV shows based on King's work, with several others already in production. At this point, Stephen King adaptation is almost a genre in and of itself. But, of course, there are actually several genres within King's catalog, the most prominent being horror, and the second most prominent being the life-affirming literary piece. Director Mike Flanagan's first two cracks at adapting King, 2017's Gerald's Game and 2019's Doctor Sleep, were in the horror genre. But now, with his new King adaptation, The Life of Chuck, Flanagan has moved into adapting one of those feel-good, life-affirming Stephen King stories, more in the vein of Stand By Me, The Shawshank Redemption, or The Green Mile. The Life of Chuck begins by telling the story of a world falling apart at the seams, before moving backwards through time to trace one man's dance through life. It can be a difficult ask for audiences to buy into a movie that places sentimentality and genuine emotion front and center, but The Life of Chuck does just that, and the audience reception has been great. The film won the highly coveted People's Choice Award at last year's Toronto International Film Festival, and it's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. I saw it, and I loved it. And I walked out appreciating just what a miracle it is that more than 50 years into his career, new Stephen King stories are still being adapted by writer-directors as wonderful as Mike Flanagan and beloved by audiences all around the world. The Life of Chuck is out now. I'm Evan Rook.
If you have summer plans, then make Macy's Summer Style Sale your first stop. That's because you'll find amazing deals on exactly what you need to make any summer occasion feel like a getaway. Whether you're headed to the beach or your friend's backyard, we're talking matching sets, airy linen, swimsuits, cover-ups, and so much more for 25 to 50% off. Yeah, up to half off. So no matter where you're going, head to the Summer Style Sale going on now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Have you tried hands-free Skechers Slip-ins yet? Because if you haven't, you're missing out on technology that changes how you think about shoes. First, these are not just regular slip-on shoes. They're not just a pair of loafers without laces. But what makes them different is the technology inside that lets you just step into them. There's a built-in hidden shoehorn that slides your foot in, so they look, feel, and wear just like a pair of shoes you're used to. Except you don't have to bend down, struggle to put them on, or touch them. Try them at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Extreme heat warning in effect for your Sunday. Mostly sunny, lower 90s. The heat index near 100. South winds gusting to 30. Tonight, partly cloudy. A few showers and storms. Lows in the lower 70s. More storms and cooler temperatures coming on Monday. Right now, it's 76.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vasta Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, is universal healthcare possible in America?
What they're thinking about is a level of healthcare that's like the best of the best, that's available all the time and it's free. So that's not going to happen.
But first, how to live your life while managing a chronic disease.
I hadn't even realized how much in my life I'd lost and how much my disease had overtaken the big and the small things in my life.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
If you have have summer plans, then make Macy's Summer Style Sale your first stop. That's because you'll find amazing deals on exactly what you need to make any summer occasion feel like a getaway. Whether you're headed to the beach or your friend's backyard, we're talking matching sets, airy linen, swimsuits, cover-ups, and so much more for 25 to 50% off. Yeah, up to half off. So no matter where you're going, head to the Summer Style Sale going on now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Whether it's been from food poisoning or a bad bout of indigestion, we've all had a bellyache that's kept us in for the night. But imagine if that one night of pain and canceled plans was your normal. Instead of having to deal with it for a few hours, it's a constant presence looming over your life. For many, that's how it feels to have inflammatory bowel disease. It's an umbrella term for chronic conditions that have an excruciating effect on the gastrointestinal tract. Most people with IBD are diagnosed by age 30. But David Merritt was ahead of the curve when his symptoms started in college.
I noticed there were some issues when I was going to the restroom, and I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that there was blood, and that scared me. I thought, you know, maybe that's cancer or something. I didn't know. After it didn't go away for a couple of weeks, I then decided to talk to my parents about it. I said, well, why don't we take you to see a doctor? And I remember actually a doctor at Northwestern Medicine diagnosed me, Dr. Nimagata. And very quickly, I was able to go into remission.
IBD is a cycle of flares and remission. Merritt was able to stop his first flare-up about a month after it started. But the disease can change at a drop of a hat. Dr. Kate Tomasino says the most common forms of inflammatory bowel disease are Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis.
So ulcerative colitis is limited to the colon, while Crohn's disease can affect any part of the GI tract. But the hallmark symptoms when you're thinking of inflammatory bowel disease and what it's like to live with that are things like urgency and diarrhea, feeling like you have to get to the bathroom right away and the stool being looser, frequency of bowel movements, abdominal pain, potentially sometimes for some people, there could be weight loss associated with that. Fatigue can be a big symptom. So depending on if a person has Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis and then where it is in the GI tract and how severe it is will really impact how the person is experiencing the condition.
Tomasino is a clinical health psychologist and associate professor of medicine and psychiatry at Northwestern University. She says that while stress isn't causing the disease, it can play a huge role in triggering a flare. For Merritt, stress and a bad order of sushi spurred his second flare-up that felt like having a daily dose of food poisoning.
You feel tethered to the bathroom. You're afraid to go out. You feel, you know, weak and you're hungry, but you also don't want to eat, right? Like all of those horrible feelings, everyone knows them because everyone's had food poisoning at least once. Well, take that feeling and expand it across weeks and months and years. And then take all of the ways that that impacts you for a day and think about the wearing effect it has on you over time. When you don't know what you can eat or what you can't eat because you don't know what's safe or what's going to make you sick.
And the right answer is always changing. You become afraid of small outings like going to the movies because you don't want to be the person interrupting the film every time you have to go to the bathroom.
There's a lot of inconveniences or impediments in your everyday life. And then there's a lot of social stigma to it as well. No one wants to be talked about for going to the bathroom. And so those really add up to be a lot of burden. And you don't even realize how much they eat at you until they're gone, until you're in remission. And I remember that feeling in 2019 when I'd been in a flare for 4.5 years. I'd been hospitalized at some point in there. It had been miserable. And by the time we figured out a medication to pull me out of that flare and get me healthy again, I was amazed. I hadn't even realized how much in my life I'd lost and how much my disease had overtaken the big and the small things in my life.
Though the flares are hard to control, Tomasino says that IBD can be a tremendous toll on your quality of life, even when in remission. As Merritt mentioned, this constant struggle can wreak havoc on your mental health.
In the whole group of people with IBD, there are higher rates of depression and anxiety, and then trauma related to the medical condition itself. So people can have post-traumatic stress from some of the medical things that they've been through with IBD.
Tomasino says that part of this trend comes from the inflammation. It predisposes patients to higher rates of depression. And though Merritt has been able to stay positive through this experience, he's dealt with brief impacts on his mental health at different times in his journey. While on a work trip in 2023, Merritt became violently sick. 2 weeks later, and finally back home, he couldn't even get out of bed.
I was spending hours in the bathroom a day, and I ended up having to be hospitalized for 3 weeks in an incredible amount of pain. And it wasn't really clear what was going to happen to me. It was a very scary experience. I was so afraid of what might happen to me that my heart rate was racing. And I literally remember they were taking my blood pressure one day, and the doctor walked in and my blood pressure shot up 20 to 30 points just because I was so afraid of what news the doctor might bring. And I loved my doctors. I thought my doctors were fantastic. I feel I owe my life to them, but I was afraid.
Recovering from this experience was the first time Merritt realized he couldn't be two separate people. There could no longer be the flare version and the remission version, because his actions in one state had profound impacts on the other. Merritt says it's helped him manage his IBD much better than before.
So even though I've been in a mini flare over the last few weeks, it hasn't felt like my life is that different, because I have learned how to better manage both the physical and the mental side of the disease.
In addition to medication and recognizing his triggers, Merritt's tried hypnosis as a tool to help manage the disease. Tomasino believes that the mental aspect plays a huge role in the patient's quality of life, so figuring out how to manage that element can drastically improve the overall experience.
Feeling depressed and feeling anxious is not comfortable. It impacts quality of life in a tremendous way. It can limit ability to engage successfully in the treatments that people need to do for IBD. But then also, hopefully, we're helping with whatever inflammatory effect that depression, anxiety, and stress might have that could potentially exacerbate the condition, decrease length of remission, get people hospitalized sooner, or increase risk of surgery. And we've seen all of those effects in the literature, that if you leave this stuff untreated, that people can have worse outcomes in inflammatory bowel disease.
As Tomasino mentioned, depression and anxiety can cause patients to fall off their treatment plan, which opens them up for a relapse. Taking medication every day or making doctor's appointments can become difficult tasks when depression has sucked away all your motivation. To combat this, Northwestern's Behavioral Medicine for Digestive Health program is launching a screening program to recognize and treat mental health concerns with IBD patients. Tomasino, a co-director of the program, says it's important to treat these as separate conditions and not make patients feel as though they're at fault for their health challenges.
This is an inflammatory condition. This is not anything that's in anyone's head. We really have to make sure that we're careful around thinking about this and talking about depression and anxiety in IBD, because people can take a lot of blame on themselves as though somehow this caused the condition or stress caused the condition. And that is absolutely not true. But we know that stress can cause inflammation, and depression can be associated with inflammation.
They're hoping to normalize the conversation around mental health, especially since this population is more likely to develop depression and anxiety. The program is being funded by parents of a young man who took his own life in 2024 after a long battle with IBD. Tomasino hopes the new screening protocol helps remove some of the stigma felt by so many patients and connects them with others in the community.
I think it's really important to note that this is never anyone's fault and that it isn't in your head if you're having these mental health symptoms on top of IBD. It's not just like you're not able to take it or manage it. I think a lot of times people have a lot of self-blame, but there's something inherent in the condition that is increasing the likelihood that someone will experience depression or anxiety related to the condition. So the more we normalize this and talk about it and help people get help when they need it, the better people will be able to manage it and feel compassion for themselves as opposed to like they're doing something wrong.
And since these are two separate conditions, Tomasino says patients most likely need more than one treatment approach. Merritt has found success using both medication and mindfulness tactics. So even though he's currently experiencing a small flare-up, he already knows the best way to get back to healthy.
I'm very fortunate where I'm on a medication now that my body really responds to. A lot of people aren't that lucky and they spend a lot of time cycling between medications, but I found one that works really well for me. So we just increased my dosage from 30 milligrams to 45 milligrams and my body started to respond very, very quickly. Otherwise, I would say really a focus on mindfulness and other just positive forms of taking care of yourself. Prioritizing reading a book or going for a walk or getting a workout in, things that make you feel good, whatever that might be. That's really important for reducing the stress that can only make your condition worse.
In addition to stress management and medication, Merritt's realized just how important the IBD community is as a support system. During his hospitalization, a friend reached out and offered to connect him with other people who'd undergone surgery for IBD.
And I said that would be great because I was at that point on the verge of like a mental breakdown. I mean, I was so stressed in the hospital bed about what might happen to me. She put me in touch and they cleared their schedules to talk to me next day. And we talked, you know, for the days after that, and we would check in on each other. And all of a sudden, right, these people I didn't know and who had no reason to care about me were there to support me and spend hours on the phone with me to help me understand and make the best decision that I could.
The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation has chapters across the country that provide support groups and other resources for patients with IBD. You can find more information about Dr. Kate Tomasino, David Merritt, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, the technology disrupting our current healthcare system when Radio Health Journal returns.
Here's comedian Howie Mandel for hands-free Cozy Fit Skechers Slip-ins.
Hey, everybody. I'm holding a new Cozy Fit Skechers Slip-in sneaker. And first of all, I barely know I'm holding it. It's that light. You see, Cozy Fit is a cool new sneaker where the upper is made of a soft quilted material. It's kind of like a little puffer jacket for your feet, except it looks like a super stylish sneaker.
Introducing new Cozy Fit Skechers Slip-ins, the latest comfort creation from Skechers, featuring Skechers' new Contour Foam, a soft, cushy footbed that shapes your foot when you walk, softening every step.
Best of all, they have slip-in technology, so I can just step in and go with no bending down and no touching my shoes. Once I start walking, you know, this is like Contour Foam is hugging my foot, and normally I don't like hugs, but when it's my Cozy Fit's doing it, I'm all in. Hug away, shoes. Hug away!
You can find Cozy Fit Skechers Slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear happens to be sold. Nice spot, Howie. Give me a hug. Give me a hug, baby.
Oh, I'm being hugged.
Universal healthcare has been a buzzy topic for years. It's been the focal point of heated debates and political campaigns. But Dr. Marshall Runge thinks most people don't have a realistic view of what universal healthcare would actually entail.
What they're thinking about is a level of healthcare that's like the best of the best, that's available all the time, and it's free. So that's not going to happen.
Runge is the dean of the University of Michigan Medical School and CEO of Michigan Medicine. He says that while having full and free access to the top medicine and technology is unlikely, a more realistic model is what he calls longitudinal health.
You have some level of healthcare that is documents what's going on, is available to you for basic problems. It's not going to take care of everything, but it provides that continuity and that interoperability that we lack today. People will argue all day and all night about whether the government can do that. Last time I talked about it, somebody said, yeah, people go to the DMV, you know, because they want to get rapid service. Well, you don't go to the DMV to get rapid service. But there are government health programs that are excellent. And they're the ones that focus around what's a concept called the medical home.
Meaning there's a group of providers, doctors, nurses, dentists, therapists, all available in the same place. This structure exists today in what are called federally qualified health clinics. They serve everyone, regardless of insurance status. However, they're often overwhelmed with patients and spend a lot of money treating chronic, expensive conditions instead of prioritizing preventive care. Still, Runge believes this model can be very effective when done well. But the initial challenge to getting this idea up and running is the shortage of primary care physicians. As someone who interacts with medical students on a daily basis, Runge has a front seat to this drop-off.
In our medical school, a quarter of the class comes in thinking they want to do primary care. And at graduation, which is going to be in a couple of weeks, it's going to be 10%. And they worry about, will they be able to repay their tuition? They worry about the fact that primary care is not well reimbursed. If you're in some settings, primary care may feel like they're not adequately either supported or respected. And I think we have to change that dynamic. And one of the things I'm trying to do here at Michigan is to make it possible for people who really have a passion for primary care to follow that passion.
Because if nothing is done to reverse this trend, our public health will greatly suffer. Unfortunately, finances aren't the only obstacle standing in the way. In fact, the greatest threat to the shortage may be the high rates of burnout physicians are experiencing. Various factors contribute to this exhaustion, including high patient workloads and after-hours paperwork. Thankfully, though there are a lot of challenges in healthcare at the moment, we are in an era of unprecedented solutions that Runge believes will reshape our current system. He dives into this revolution in his new book, The Great Healthcare Disruption: Big Tech, Bold Policy, and the Future of American Medicine. A prominent example in his book is the role of technology, particularly AI, in making healthcare more efficient. Runge says some AI systems may be pivotal in the fight against physician burnout. A big issue doctors run into is having to work after hours to catch up on all the paperwork they didn't get to during the day. There are currently a few systems that are already reforming these administrative tasks.
There's a technology I really only became aware of in the last couple of years called ambient AI. What ambient AI does is it is present, it listens. We always ask, is it okay if we use AI to record this, our interaction? Some patients don't want that, but most are just fine with it. What is great, though, is it's not just a transcription. The AI gathers all the information. It puts it in the context of my or your health problems that it knows from the electronic medical record. And then it generates a really excellent medical note, such that when I finish seeing a patient, I can look at that note in about 2 or 3 minutes and see if there's something I need to correct. If not, I'm done with that process.
This technology is not only helpful to the physician, but it can also be a tool to empower patients. The best way to stay on top of your health status is to get it directly from the source, your medical record. However, these documents are often filled with pages and pages of complex language and data that scare many people off. But now, AI can streamline that whole process.
It's often 50, 60 pages of what seems like repetitive and a lot of nonsense in there. If you make a PDF of that and feed it into your favorite AI engine and say, generate a 2-page summary, in about 2 minutes, it gives you a fantastic 2-page summary of what the major issues are, what needs to be dealt with, what you need to do as a person to try to improve your health. And the reason I'm giving that as an example is that physicians and all care providers have to look through that whole medical record, and that takes forever. And they may miss things because everybody's in a hurry. So when you think about ways that AI can reduce the workload and reduce burnout and stress on care providers, I think that can make a huge difference.
Making medical records more efficient is a game changer, but it's not the only solution needed in this space. An issue that's been a thorn in the medical community's side for years is the inability for records to be shared between providers and practices. Not all electronic health record systems are made equally, which makes sharing information difficult at best.
And some of that is, I'm convinced, is intentional. This has been a principle that's been out there for a long time, but it's not really in the interest of some companies that make electronic medical records to make that easy. And so they don't make it easy. I mean, they could make it easy, but they don't make it easy.
Getting past this hurdle opens up so many more possibilities for innovation in the healthcare space. For example, companies like Amazon are disrupting the industry with forward-thinking ideas that increase access to doctors and medication. They've identified the pain points and are providing solutions, like offering on-demand virtual care. However, without the easy sharing of medical records, Runge worries it'll lead to fragmented care where a patient isn't getting the full picture of their health.
I saw an advertisement for Amazon recently. I think it was Amazon, one of the 24/7 services that said, well, you're getting on an airplane. You're worried that you have a urinary tract infection. Get on Amazon Clinic and your medicine will be waiting for you when you get off the plane. And that's pretty cool. Of course, it presumes that that diagnosis can be made over the phone. And in many cases, it can. But the other aspect of that is none of those 24/7 clinics have access to your medical record. So what if there's something in your medical record that you forgot to say, or maybe you don't even know about, that would be a contraindication, would be bad for you to get a certain antibiotic or to get a certain therapy? Or what if whatever you receive is something that your primary care physician, if you have one, would want to know about? There's no back and forth there.
Which is why making health records more easily shareable will be such a game changer. It's important to note that creating all of these solutions to improve public health will only work if the public cares about their health. We can have all the technology in the world and still fall behind because we're patching up symptoms instead of focusing on preventive care.
One of the ways that we can better afford healthcare is to become healthier. But as it is now, we don't focus so much on becoming healthier. We focus a lot on, I want to have access to the most advanced care. We expect everything from healthcare, and healthcare cannot deliver everything.
So as we demand more from healthcare, Runge believes we need to also demand more of ourselves and have a lifestyle that supports health and longevity. Join us next week as Runge explains how placing preventive medicine at the center of healthcare will lower costs and create a healthier America. You can find more information about Dr. Marshall Runge and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
If you have summer plans, then make Macy's Summer Style Sale your first stop. That's because you'll find amazing deals on exactly what you need to make any summer occasion feel like a getaway. Whether you're headed to the beach or your friend's backyard, we're talking matching sets, airy linen, swimsuits, cover-ups, and so much more for 25 to 50% off. Yeah, up to half off. So no matter where you're going, head to the Summer Style Sale going on now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Progressive knows there are some surprisingly expensive things in life, like frames. Because you found a classic 70s concert poster. But when you went to get it framed, you realized the frame will cost about four times the amount of the poster. Which is actually absurd, because no one will be looking at the frame, and if they are, then you severely overestimated how cool this poster is. But then you remember by switching your home and auto to Progressive, you could save hundreds and put it towards a classic 70s concert poster in an absurdly overpriced frame. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Medical notes this week. Your aura may just be a mixture of oils and fats on the skin. Scientists have discovered that perfumes, lotions, and personal products interact with what's called our human oxidation field. It's a constant cloud of molecules we emit that can negatively interact with our environment and worsen our air quality. Interestingly, research in Science Advances shows that fragrances can suppress this effect. Scientists still don't fully know why we yawn, but they're getting closer. It turns out yawning isn't just about boredom or tiredness. Researchers now think yawning helps prepare us to change from a state of low activity to high activity. For example, when you wake up and yawn, it's anticipating your move to get up and moving. However, a lot is still unknown, and researchers hope to soon understand the connection between yawning and empathy.
The debate over fluoride is back in the spotlight. It's been a practice in America to help prevent tooth decay, so why are some states banning it? Well, the measurements are super important. Not adding enough fluoride to drinking water can lead to cavities, but adding too much can cause tooth and bone issues. Experts say the decision to add fluoride to drinking water should be region-specific and science-based. And finally, urban rats may be more than just an annoying pest. New research in the journal PLOS Neglected Tropical Diseases reveals that city rats are a big threat to public health. They spread deadly bacteria through urine that gets into the soil, water, and nearby environment. Since it's not realistic to get rid of all rats, researchers are focusing on how to best control their reproduction and migrations. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Mayon Vosta Betancourt.
If you have summer plans, then make Macy's Summer Style Sale your first stop. That's because you'll find amazing deals on exactly what you need to make any summer occasion feel like a getaway. Whether you're headed to the beach or your friend's backyard, we're talking matching sets, airy linen, swimsuits, cover-ups, and so much more for 25 to 50% off. Yeah, up to half off. So no matter where you're going, head to the Summer Style Sale going on now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Can your pad absorb everything and stay fresh? Always Radiant with FlexFoam can. Get up to zero leaks, zero odor, and zero feel. Because FlexFoam is the only pad with a flexible foam core. You heard me, foam. Always Radiant is so thin, it feels like nothing, yet protects like nothing else. Can your pad do that? For up to 100% leak-free protection, try Always Radiant to see what FlexFoam can do for you.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content, and tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Trail Mix 103.1, available on the Civic Media app. Download the app for free.
Friend of mine, the tables have turned. Yeah, one calls me and then where's that party? That kind of love was the killing kind.